Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On this week's show, we're going to be talking about training and raising a guide dog. We're going to introduce you to Pam and then sort of walk you through the process of how she got involved in this and then the procedures that the dogs go through to go through their various stages of training. It's really a fascinating story, and I think you'll enjoy it.
But first, to our tip of the week. This week's tip is use the mobility aid that works for you. But let me tell you, that puppy was adorable.
That was a cute puppy. I've always used a cane. I never really considered using a dog, but you know, you really have to decide what's right for you and the right environment and your lifestyle and things like that. I started using a cane. I had some amount of vision so I could navigate a little bit, maybe see the contrast between the sidewalk and the grass on the side, or see where the curb of a street was starting or something like that. So, you know, I felt pretty comfortable with the cane, even when I was living on my own and taking public transit and stuff like that. But if I was living in New York, I might consider, in New York City, I might consider using a guide dog just because it's a little bit more crowded, there are more obstacles in the way and things like that. So you really have to decide what works for you and what your lifestyle is like. But you also might consider using things like GPS or any other kind of aids that might help, or use a combination of things. I mean, if you use a cane sometimes and a dog other times, you know, maybe that works for people.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Pam Boy, who was very generous with her time, and she spent a long time with us. And we'll meet Casey as we go along. That's her current puppy.
My name is Pam Boy, and I am a volunteer puppy raiser for Guiding Eyes. I'm also involved in our local region, which is the Monroe region of Guiding Eyes. I am one of the regional helpers, and my expertise is I help teach the puppy classes, the puppy kindergarten classes for the littler puppies. So I help the raisers and support them in that. And I also help a little bit with the paperwork and some of the supplies.
Pam is quite enthusiastic about this program, and you can tell that from her attitude in the rest of the show here.
She started about 6 years ago and has just, her enthusiasm has blossomed through the years. It's really kind of cool.
We had a family in our church who had raised a Guiding Eyes puppy years and years ago, and they had a brochure. So I called and I talked for quite some time with one of our region managers, Cindy Chait, and decided I wanted to try this. There were classes starting up, the pre-placement classes I told you about. So we went there, started attending classes, and we got our first puppy, Archie.
That was Casey in the background. You know, we actually asked her to have Casey bark so we could introduce you to Casey, but she said, no, Casey won't bark.
You hear a little bit of whining sometimes in the background from Casey, but Casey's only 5 months old, and I was impressed. For a dog who was only 5 months old, this dog was incredibly well-behaved.
So Casey, it turns out, is Pam's sixth puppy, and we asked her what happened to the previous five. Well, the first one turned out to get sick when Pam had only had him for a few months, and whatever his health issues were would have made him unsuitable to be a guide dog. Her second puppy, Noelle, we actually got to meet also. It turned out Noelle flunked her final exam. The problem was she wouldn't disobey an order. This is crucial. If the blind person comes to a corner and says, okay, I want to cross the street, and the dog sees that it's not safe, the dog needs to be confident enough to disobey the person, and Noelle wouldn't disobey. So Noelle went back to her puppy raising family, and so we got to meet her, and she's a wonderful dog.
You know, you have to admire Pam's persistence and, you know, good humor in doing these things. To have your first two dogs not go through to graduation had to be a big setback and kind of a disappointment. So I admire her perseverance in sticking with it.
Well, the next two got placed. The fifth one got transferred to another family when Pam got Casey. And as we've mentioned, Casey's 5 months old now. She's still really a puppy, but is already incredibly well-behaved. So let's meet Casey.
But we were impressed. When we came to the door, neither one of them barked.
We do really try and discourage, you know, barking. Good girl, down. Because guide dogs, we don't want the guide dogs to be annoying, especially if they're in an apartment or when we go to a public place. Like, Casey is right now whining for attention because she's bored. I'm trying to give her minimal support and attention right now because she's at that level she should handle it. Casey, as I say, settling is not her strong point, but we're working on it, Casey. I know you want to say hi. I have her for another year till she's about 16 to 18 months, and then she'll go back. So she's still really young, and she's not used to being confined to the leash that much at home. She's very bouncy, so we are working on that. So right now I'm going to get her a toy that will keep her busy. Casey, stay. Good job. Whoa, that is amazing. Let me teach them to stay until we release them. Good choice.
It's great. You can see through that whole interaction just how caring and very supportive Pam is with Casey. She used that phrase, good choice, a lot when the dog did something that she deemed to be correct.
And sometimes she would put the dog in a situation where things could have gone either way. And she'd say, now, Casey, make a good choice. Make a good choice. And when Casey made the right choice, she'd say, good choice, Casey.
The other thing I wanted to mention, we talked about the first two dogs that Pam had didn't make it to graduation. Apparently, that isn't too unusual. She says the graduation rate to becoming a seeing eye dog is only a little over 60%, she was thinking. But they do find very good homes for the dogs that don't make it through the whole program. Some of them may work for the ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Board, you know, sniffers at the airport and things like that, looking for drugs. Some of them work for police stations and police folks and things like that. So they find very good homes for these. And some are just adopted to families who want a dog and are going to be good with them.
You are listening to Viewpoints, 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 Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is what's involved in raising and training a guide dog. Well, where do they find people like Pam, and how do they prepare them to raise the puppies?
I started in the fall of 2005 with Guiding Eyes for the Blind. I had to go through their training program. It's called pre-placement, where you learn about the organization and the philosophy and all the commands. Right now it's a series of 3 2-hour courses you take. And then I had to puppy sit several puppies of different ages to make sure that, first of all, I knew the ropes, and second of all, I really wanted to do this. And there was a home visit just to make sure my home was suitable. They pointed out a few things we hadn't thought about. Little hole under the deck that a puppy might squeak through, or my basement stairs are rather steep, so they suggested a stair gate, which was very easy to fix, and warned me about leaving, you know, newspapers down and kids' toys, and that's why we gated off that back room so the children could play with their toys and keep the puppies safe, and eventually we open it up and allow the puppies more access as they're able. We waited and waited, and then in January, it took about 3-4 months, and then we got our first puppy.
And this is a 24/7 proposition for not only Pam, but the entire family, because everybody in the household has to be consistent about how they're treating the dog and what they allow the dog to do. So it's really a family project.
And not just consistent with each other, but consistent with the program. So there are hand signals that mean sit, lie down, you're released, whatever. And these puppies have to learn all of those, because when they go back for their older dog final training, they can't be needing to relearn some of the basics. Obviously, there's a lot involved in raising a puppy. Guiding Eyes provides some of it. The rest of it is provided directly by the family.
Guiding Eyes provides top-notch medical care for them. They provide heartworm medication, monthly heartworm medication, and flea medication at cost. Flea medication is very expensive, so we do get that. They also provide collars, Casey, and of course the puppy. And they provide the kennels. We have a whole bunch of the crates. They provide those. We start with a little kennel with the puppy and then switch it up. So we do that. We have to provide food, and it has to be a good quality food, and toys. Guiding Eyes does provide collars. This fancy collar, though, of course, is something I've provided. And we have to buy little things like leashes and foods. Guiding Eyes estimates that the initial cost for puppy raising is about $200, and then it's probably $200 to $300 a year for food. But if a puppy raiser can't afford the food, that should not prevent them from being a puppy raiser. Then we can help find a sponsor for the food. For us, our tax accountant said a lot of that, those expenses are tax deductible.
So this is something you really want to do if you want to get involved in this, and you shouldn't take the decision lightly. But you can see that Pam takes a lot of enjoyment out of it and has really become so involved in the program and getting a lot of rewards out of it herself.
So they call what she's doing pre-training in teaching them the standardized skills and behaviors.
Yes, we actually do what they call the pre-training. We do three basic things. We teach them the basic obedience skills. And as I say, all the guiding eyes, everyone in guiding eyes does the same hand signals and verbal signals in the same way we teach the things so that they have this very solid skill set. We call those the core skills. I mean, sit, down, stand, some different things like back up, because guide dogs need to back up and pet dogs don't. So we teach those that. The second thing we do is we socialize them. We take them out to public places. When we have a great community, which is very open to our dogs coming, stores and banks and movie theaters, schools, churches, we try and expose them to as much as we can when they're little, so they have a good library and they're very confident in the different places and they learn how to behave appropriately. But house manners is the third thing that's really important, because since Casey is going to go to someone who's visually impaired, it's incredibly important that she have solid house manners. It includes, well, not jumping, polite people greetings at the doors, which takes a while to do it. Casey. It also is not going on any furniture. We do not allow them on any furniture. If a graduate decides to allow the dog on the couch or bed, that's their choice. But it's much easier to allow them it than to break them of it. Because right. Once they get a privilege, they really like to take advantage. No counter surfing. We never give them people food, or we just ignore them when we're at the table. No jumping. We don't want them to take things like shoes or Casey papers or anything and do anything with them. No going into the trash. So the house manners, really, we teach them different things. Like when I open the stove, I have her sit. When she needs to go out, and she also, is house trained. Mm-hmm. That is very important, too. She has to be reliable. And we teach them to go on command outside, as you know. And Casey, we've also taught her to ring a bell so she can notify us if she has a need and it's not on schedule. And they're also kennel trained. She sleeps in, as you see, her kennel over there. So that, I think, that's the house manners. But that's the most important thing.
And you'd swear the dog was listening to this whole explanation, because sure enough, she wanted to go outside.
Good girl.
Could you get her to do that again?
Casey, get your bells. Get your bells. Is it time to go out, sweetie?
So you can tell this is a highly structured program with some very definite targets and goals for these dogs. And there's a high hurdle to pass, but they get many of them through it.
And the next hurdle is they get tested before they're accepted into the next phase of training at the Guiding Eyes facility. And at this point, they've got professional trainers teaching them additional specialized skills and behaviors that they're going to need every day.
They have about 6 months additional training down at the Guiding Eyes Training School, which is in Yorktown Heights, New York. First of all, though, they have a big test called the Infratraining Test, where they assess all the dogs and do different things. They assess their obedience, how confident they are in situations, how they adapt in the kennel. Some dogs just can't handle the kennel life. Mm-hmm. They also look at quarterly evaluations that we fill out, and we have take a little video on the dog. So they have the dog's history and their health. When they pass the test and are able to go into training, then they enter the training program for about 6 months. They are assigned a trainer. There's between 6 and 10 dogs to a trainer, and the trainers work in pairs. And they go through, there's 4 different phases of training, which is different levels of work. They get them adapted to the harness. Mm. They teach them to target curbs with their, you know, paws in the proper position to stop and wait for the signal to go on. They learn left turns and right turns, which are, you know, the 90-degree turns. So, like, left turn, I guess, is hard because I have to take a step back and turn. And they progress through their trainings. They start at the training school, which is a fairly suburban area. And then they go a little more populated to White Plains. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they do their final training in the Manhattan and the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And they're... philosophy is if the dog can make it in the city, mm-hmm. they can make it anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's the last phase, is when the dogs complete phase 4 mm-hmm. and learn escalators and revolving doors and the train station and that intelligent disobedience. Mm-hmm. So when the person tells them to go forward and it's dangerous, they will choose not to, which is hard for a dog. When they do that, they have a blindfold test where the trainers are blindfolded and have a trainer behind and make sure that the dog can work with someone who's not sighted. Mm-hmm. And then they are what they call class ready.
So if they pass that test and they're class ready, well, that's when they get introduced to a real visual impaired person with whom they will hopefully be paired for many, many years.
Graduating classes range between 10 and 15 students, and they come in and they spend 2 or 3 days with the trainers. So the students would be the blind or sight impaired people mm-hmm. who have gone through orientation and mobility training. They have been screened by Guiding Eyes, so Guiding Eyes has visited, trainers have visited their home, mm-hmm. so they know what kind of living situation the dog, it's all to match the dog, because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. they have different personalities, different paces. Students stay for 26 days at the Guiding Eyes campus, and they have private rooms for each person. And Guiding Eyes provides everything, the meals, they have a nurse on site, everything, the dogs, for free mm-hmm. to the blind wow. and sight impaired students. So they come, and the trainers take a couple days to get to know the students, teach them how to work with the harness. And they do what they call a Juno walk, where the instructors hold the harness and the person walks with them to get the person's pace and pull and their height. Because that's their major way they match the dogs. Is Guiding Eyes dogs are all different sizes. Some are petite. Mm-hmm. Some are really quite large. Some of the boys are really large, bulky boys. Some walk fast. Some walk slow. Some have a little pull to the right or the left. And Guiding Eyes tries to match the right dog to the right person. And then... usually it's Wednesday of the week, it's dog day, and the trainers have matched the dogs with the person, and they get to meet their new companions and start working with them. There's a graduation. That is so emotional and wonderful, and you are just proud, and it's like you burst a button. It's like sending your child off to college and not seeing them for 4 years. Then all of a sudden you get to see them in their new job, and they have these spanking new harnesses on, and the dogs are all groomed to a T. A lot of the graduates dress them up with bandanas, and the graduates are all dressed up. And then you get to get, and Guiding Eyes does present the razors with a very nice certificate and a formal photo of the graduate with the dog and harness.
Pam's actually got 2 of those framed photos of puppies with their graduates in her front hall.
That has to be very gratifying. You could tell how much she felt very strongly about that whole thing and felt very proud of the dog she had raised.
And then what does she do after graduation, which, by the way, is a 6-hour drive from her house? She drives less than an hour to the next place where she picks up her next puppy, and she starts all over again. So this is a pretty involved process. How much would you suppose it costs to prepare a guide dog?
I am always in awe that it costs just over $45,000 to train one guide dog team.
$45,000?
$45,000. Now, that includes breeding program, which is wonderful. The medical care for these dogs, which is top-notch. And all the training. It also covers the expenses of having the graduate come and stay for the 26 mm-hmm. days, because the meals, everything is provided when they come, because they really have to focus on training with the dog. So Guiding Eyes provides it all the field reps and all the lifetime follow-up care. So Guiding Eyes, you know, and they graduated over 170 people last year.
So, of course, that isn't the kind of finances that most people will be able to put into getting a guide dog. And so we asked where the Guiding Eyes organization gets a lot of their funding to make this possible.
Well, it doesn't come from the government. It comes from a lot of private donors and corporations. We have a lot of fundraising. Eli Manning helps sponsor a golf tournament every year that features both blind and sighted golfers. And that's always very good to not only raise money, but raise awareness for Guiding Eyes. We do local fundraisers. We have great support from many Lions and Rotary clubs. Mm-hmm. We'll sponsor a dog. If you go on the website, there's opportunities to name a puppy or sponsor a graduation. You know, and a lot of private donations, but they receive no government funding. The outside public, if they do adopt a dog, there is a fee. It's a very reasonable in the dog world fee. So that's how they make their money. It's just, and it's incredible. The staff is not paid nearly enough.
Well, anyway, that's wonderful for those people who are willing to donate and make these services available to the people who need it.
Now for this week's high-tech item, breeding the dogs.
Yeah, you wonder where they come from, huh, these special dogs?
Well, you might think, I mean, what's so high-tech about that? But this is actually done very scientifically, and they have strict standards for the mothers, who they call broods, and for the fathers, who they call studs.
Guiding Eyes Breeds has a wonderful stock of labs that they've been breeding since 1954. Mm-hmm. They have their own colony of broods and studs. They're not puppy mill dogs in any sense, because that would not be healthy. What they do is they have foster families that care for the dogs. They have very thorough checkups. They have a very strict diet, strict exercise routine. Broods and studs have to be walked at the minimum of 3 miles a day, mm-hmm. rain or shine.
And they're very careful to breed for the characteristics they want in these dogs and to breed out any diseases and other issues that might cause the dogs not to be good guide dogs.
So they keep very thorough medical records on all of the dogs from birth through as long as there's somebody related to the program who still has the dog. So if your dog's got some inheritable disease or condition, weak joints, whatever, they'll keep track of that and try to make sure not to let that genetic trait proliferate. So when a female does get pregnant, she stays with her foster family until it's almost time to deliver the litter, and then she goes to a very special whelping center.
They have an area to whelp, which is when they give birth, and it's totally monitored, and Guiding Eyes has found that the best way is to do it naturally, so they have video cameras, and they leave the dog alone and do not intervene unless it's medically necessary, but they do have, you know, all the medical equipment there should a need arise. Mm-hmm. When the puppies are first born, they stay with their mom, and they're with their mom at the development center for about a week. And the puppies, they're not just left with their mother alone. They start their training at 1 week old. Volunteers come in, and the first thing they do is they start massaging those little teensy little puppies so that they get used to human touch, so they get comfortable and just start the bonding process. And then they start little lessons as the puppies get older. They teach these little five-week-old puppies to sit down and stand, and they start the socialization process. They have toys, they have things overhead, they play music, and they play tapes of street sounds for the dogs to get them used to doing it.
Yeah.
And they bring them to these different socialization areas. They play with the puppies, they have the puppies interact with each other, and of course with their mothers, but they also give the mothers a break. And with other, they have other resident dogs there so that the puppies can react with a male dog or maybe see a German Shepherd.
So you can tell that this training process starts right from the beginning and continues for the rest of the dog's life at a very early age.
And after what she just described, things get more serious.
When they're about 5 weeks old, they start going overnight with different families to get used to different home environments. Again, the lessons continue. And then they come back and then they have a puppy test. And so that they can determine, would this dog be suitable to be a guide dog? Because not all puppies have the right temperament and intelligence and personality. And some of them also have health problems.
Yet another test. We almost forgot about the puppy test.
That's right. These dogs, I think, took more tests than we did. And right. We went to school for a long time.
Well, that whole thing is a fascinating process. And I hope you enjoyed hearing about how these dogs are trained from beginning to end. It is really some process. And Pam does a great job describing it. Thanks a lot.
And the organization that Pam works through is called Guiding Eyes for the Blind. They're one of the premier guide dog training organizations in the United States. If you want more information about them, they're at www.guidingeyes.org. That's all one word. Their phone number is 800-942-0149. And the local organization, there's a few dozen puppies right around Rochester, New York, is called Guiding Eyes of Monroe County. And their website is guiding-eyes-monroe.org. But this is far from the only organization that provides guide dogs and trains guide dogs. The National Federation of the Blind has a list of, must be 15 of them. We mentioned Leader Dogs for the Blind in Michigan during our show on GPS units specifically designed for blind people. That was show 1142, but they also train guide dogs. There are several local organizations called Guide Dogs for the Blind, but just look one up in your area. They're in many, many states. So you can probably find one closer to you than New York if you don't happen to live in New York. As always, if you missed any of the links or phone numbers we mentioned, they're all in the show notes, which you can find at our website, www.viewpointsplus.net. That's it for show number 1209. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about Mac accessibility, including VoiceOver and Zoom that come with iOS version 10.4 and later. You may remember Mike Arrigo from show 1145 on smartphones. Well, he's a big Mac user, and we spoke with him about these tools, and we got him to do some demonstrations using VoiceOver to navigate the computer and the web. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to viewpoints@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, produced by Peter Torpey and Nancy Goodman Torpey in collaboration with WXXI Reach Out Radio. To subscribe to the podcast, access a full archive of shows and show notes, or to find out more, visit www.viewpointsplus.net, or you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter as Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day. Thank you.